Have you taught for 34 years, or did you teach your first year 34 times? There is a difference. Back in a moment with our guest, Jane Church.
Strike up the band, so you can give your kids a helping hand. From interviews to teaching tips, you'll add this to your bag of tricks. There's no smarter way to spend your time, so keep it right here with James Devine. The Music Ed Podcast, where you get quick and easy tips on how to be a better band teacher.
Hey, this is James Devine with the Music Ed Podcast, and today I have a guest. Her name is Jane Church, and we're going to be talking about the importance of longevity in your music program. Jane, tell us a little bit about your career, where you are now, where you've been, and kind of maybe some of the things that led you there.
Okay, well, let's see. Starting with, I guess, schooling, I got my bachelor's in music education from Michigan State University. Then I went on to get my master's in saxophone performance and woodwind specialist at Michigan State. My first job was in a little town called Hesperia, Michigan. It's located on the west side of Michigan, near Lake Michigan. And I was there for 4 years. I taught grades 5 through 12 band, and I had band and jazz band. Then I left there and I came to East Lansing, Michigan, and I was the director of bands at East Lansing High School for 30 years. I retired in 2010, and since then I've been out working. There's a couple of big music camps in Michigan. I think the one that people are a little bit more familiar with is maybe Interlochen, because it's a lot older. While I went to Interlochen in high school, I worked for Blue Lake Fine Arts Camp, which is located near Muskegon, Michigan, and it's a summer school of the arts for grades, basically kids going into sixth through graduating seniors. So I do that, and I do clinics, and I guest conduct, and I'm doing an honors band here next month, and so I still am pretty connected to the business, but I'm just not teaching full time.
When you look back at your career, what do you think? We had a conversation at Midwest this year, and that's why I invited you on this podcast, about the importance of longevity in a program. And I wonder if you could just touch on that, why you think longevity is important. And then I may ask you some questions related to your own path in that.
All right. Well, I remember that you were surprised that I had been in one school district for 30 years. And you said, is that a good thing? And I said, well, it all depends on how you look at it. It's exciting when you get a new job. And for a year or for two or maybe three, you know, the excitement is new, is there, and everybody's new, and everybody's trying to check each other out and kind of test the waters. For some people, it gets to that, you know, a little after that, and it's, you settle into the job. Some people are not comfortable with that, and then they feel like they have to go find something else and be, you know, get that first part of the job excitement again. I think the thing that I found over those years is, for one thing, you are in a school district, and for better or for worse, you get to know the community, you get to know the kids. In some cases, not necessarily me, I think in a college town, I didn't have as many students that graduated from high school, got married, and had families. In my situation, it was more like they got their postdoctorates, and then they got married and had kids. So it wasn't until my last year of teaching in East Lansing that I finally had some of my first students' children. I think you get to know the community. The community gets to know you. One of the things I remember you and I talked about was administration. And I said, boy, if you stay or you leave a job because of administration, it's not really a great reason, because I don't know about Colorado, but here, and I think in the Midwest, I think administrators come and go like water. They're, you know, if you don't like your principal or whoever, wait a couple of years and they'll probably change. Am I right? Am I pretty close on that?
That is so true. And I lost track, but I think I'm on my sixth or seventh head principal in the 18 years that I've been teaching, and probably about the fourth or fifth one here at my present school. And I think this one's going to stay, and I have a really good one right now. So I'm hoping she'll stay. We were comparing notes one time, and it looks like we can retire at about the same time. So I'm hoping she'll stick around. But yeah, I know for a while there, I just thought, okay, if I could just hang on one more year, then things will change for the I didn't know for sure if they'd be better, but I knew they'd change in a year or two. And it's paid off to – I'm in my 11th year here. Now, I've noticed a turnaround right around year 10. There was something about hitting a decade for me. And I don't know if you could notice something when you look back. Can you notice a turning point?
Yeah, actually, I remember – not too long into my career in East Lansing, I was at our state music conference, and Tim Lotzenheiser, you know that name, right?
Yes.
Okay, Tim Lotzenheiser was there at a booth, and he saw me and said, you look really down. What's wrong? And I said, oh, I think I'm burned out. And he looked at me, he says, how old are you? And I don't know. I think I said I was 28 or 29. He says, you haven't even caught on fire yet. And, you know, I thought about that all these years, that I think sometimes you get into a rut. And I think it's really easy. I've said this to people, that there are people out there that I taught 34 years. And there are other people that taught the same year 34 times. And I think if you get into that rut and you teach the same things and the same techniques over and over and over again, it can drive you nuts. And then, of course, you want to leave. You want to try something new. I think the challenge is to how do you keep it fresh for you and still teach the same skills and basic things? I mean, you still have to say, no, Johnny, that's an eighth note. How do you say it or do it or change it so that they get it? And I think part of the thing over 30 years, you know, kids changed a lot. Even in the 6 years that I've been retired now, I see big changes as I'm in schools doing work for Blue Lake Fine Arts Camp, changes from when I was there. And I think you have to learn to roll with whatever and figure out different ways to teach the same concepts to this particular decade or this era of people. And I think that makes it more interesting. If you don't do that, though, chances are you can get really bogged down and feel like it's going nowhere.
Wow, some great stuff in there. I love those quotes. You haven't even caught on fire yet. That's really great. I love that.
I reminded him of that when I retired, and I said, I wrote him a note and said that, you know, I almost thought I was going to get out of teaching after about 5-6 years, and then here it was 34 years later, and I was finally retiring. And I've always thought about that. You know, what do you do to keep your program interesting to you? I mean, you've got to keep it interesting to your students and you know, your community, but what do you do to make it interesting for you?
I think, I'm sorry.
In my case, you know, like in East Lansing, I'm in a college town where at the high school we had 65 different countries represented. And so sometimes I would do things with an international flair. Sometimes we did variations on a Korean folk song, John Barnes Chants one time. And one of my Korean students dressed up in traditional Korean garb, sat on a rug on the stage with, and I can't remember the name, it looks like a sitar, but it isn't, and played Arirang, which is the folk song that Korean folk song's based on. So we had her do that first, and then we played the piece, you know. So it kind of related to some of our international crowd, one aspect of it.
Very cool. I like that idea. How have you seen kids change in the 30 years, 30 plus years you were teaching, and even in the 6 years since you've retired?
I'm laughing. I think they have the, I think American kids have the world's best self-esteem, whether it's deserved or not. they have self-esteem, boy. They've been stroked and told they're wonderful. And it's a little bit of a concern because, and we all have, it doesn't matter what state we're in, we have those helicopter parents that just can't seem to let their kids do anything that would cause them to fail. And I worry about that for those kids in the long run. I do think that there's many things that they're smarter. Every year they're smarter. I think in some situations, kids are better players. Like I judge in Michigan, the Michigan School Band and Orchestra Association, I judge band and orchestra festivals and solo and ensemble festivals. And I hear kids playing literature that sometimes they shouldn't be playing because it's way over their head. And yet I hear kids that are playing stuff that go, wow, I couldn't play that when I was their age. So skill levels are better, but there's also, I think, maybe, like I say, there's big self-esteem. I noticed a big difference from my first job, which was a little farm community out in the country, to much more, we had lots of National Merit finalists at East Lansing. You know, it was a big, you know, high academic school. And I always thought my kids in my little farm community had a whole lot of common sense, but my kids in the college town were a whole lot smarter as far as book-wise. Uh-huh. So it's interesting, but I think overall the self-esteem thing, it's like everybody feels real good about themselves. Doesn't matter if they're passing the test or not, they still feel good about themselves, and I feel that's something that they're getting probably from home.
You are so right about adapting for the students and for what the way their brains are working now. I was starting to get frustrated because it seemed like every year if I gave out information sheets, more and more of them ended up on the band room floor at the end of practice instead of
home. Oh, yeah.
And now even when we have drum major auditions coming up, I didn't even make copies. I just posted an information sheet on the board and I posted something on the whiteboard saying there's an information sheet. If you're interested, take a picture of it and start practicing. Because I know that's what a lot of them are going to do anyway. And it saves me paper and...
Oh, yeah. Well, even in the 6 years, my last several years of teaching, I had a web page. And I updated it weekly. And I had, the week's activities. I didn't put, and now when I go into schools, they all have it on their whiteboard or different ways. It's on. There's no paper anymore, and I know some schools here in Michigan are getting away from even textbooks. The textbooks are on their laptops or the notebooks that they carry around that the school provides. But the paper thing. I got to a point too where, here it is. Here's my band handbook. It's online, and you're responsible for it. And at some point in time, you give them that stuff. If they throw it on the floor or they leave it in their folder, you know, they're still accountable for it. And that's where I would have them sign a thing and their parents and said, yes, I've read and understand the handbook. Whether they read it or understood it, that was their deal. But they had to sign that. So then I could hold them accountable. You're going skiing instead of coming to this concert, but you signed this statement that said that you would be here, you know. Uh-huh. So, yeah, the paper stuff, I even got away from. But, you know, since I retired, they're, you know, even further away. I sent, when I retired, I sent everybody an email. Well, now it would be a tweet. They don't even read emails. And God forbid they wouldn't go to a website. You know, and that's just 6 years.
Yeah, I'm finding the web. I think I've had the website for about 5 or 6 years. And I think it gets less use now than than it used to. For me, the Facebook page is working really well. And I just started a Tri-M chapter, and like an hour after our first meeting ended, one of the officers that we had just elected already started a Facebook page and had invited me and had announcements on there, and 40 kids had joined already or something like that. I was really amazed. It's like, wow, you guys are taking action and getting it done.
That's cool. Now, one of the things, though, it's interesting you talk about Facebook. I know a lot of people are on Facebook. I personally am not. And it has mostly to do with the fact that I was a teacher. In Michigan, there are lots of schools that have banned Facebook teachers from having Facebook contact. They can't friend. They can't have anybody like a page until the kids graduate. About 5 years ago, I did a clinic at our state music conference about social networking and your music program. And, you know, when it's used professionally, but all you need to do is get some kid or some parent, and if you're not monitoring it daily, putting something on there wrong, I've seen board members that have had to retract statements about teachers they've made. I've seen teachers be fired over things they put on Facebook. And I'll tell you one other thing, and I got this from the kids. I conduct a band at Blue Lake in the summer, and I was talking to the kids informally one day. They don't use Facebook. Their grandparents think they use Facebook. And I said, yeah, your grandkids put on Facebook what they want you to see. They're using Tumblr. They're using Instagram. They're using Twitter. They're using things that you've never even heard of. And so I'm not sure Facebook is, you know, it's a good thing to start with, but I'm not sure they're using that much either.
What I'm finding is that they use the messenger aspect of it a lot, and they kind of see what the groups they follow are doing. So we get quite a bit of interaction with my orchestra. I just have one orchestra. They created their own page, and so they post announcements and stuff. And there's quite a bit of interaction. Probably half the kids are interacting or seeing the posts at least. They may not respond or do anything like that, but they're seeing it. I remember when we have a marching band page, and so when I posted the drum major auditions, it was almost scary because as soon as I posted that on there, there were like 10 likes within 30 seconds. It's like, are we just like have it open and looking for an announcement or what? So I want to talk about a little bit more about your 30 years again. And I'm going to just take a guess that at the start of that, you didn't think, oh, I'm going to do this for 30 years or be here for 30 years. Was there a point where you kind of knew you would?
Well, I do remember being out on the marching field saying, I probably won't be standing on a ladder conducting the Star Spangled Banner by the time I'm 40. And, well, that came and went. And I was still on the ladder doing the Star. Well, actually, I was having the drum majors do it more and more, and I didn't need to do it anymore. But, you know, I never really thought about doing. Once I realized, well, okay, let's go back to when I thought I was being burned out. I actually went, our school district was going through some staff reductions, and I wasn't being reduced, but they were offering anybody that wanted to work with the career counselor. So I actually went to these little meetings and stuff, and I read a book called What Color Is Your Parachute, thinking I was going to find out, you know, you take there's a thing called a MOIS test. I forget. It's an interest test that kind of puts you in a direction of maybe a career that you might do. And so I thought, oh, good, I'm going to find out that I should probably be a nuclear physicist or something. And when I got done with all of this stuff and all of these meeting class, whatever's that I went to, it said that I probably should do something in education and I probably should do something in music. And at first, I was really depressed. I thought, oh, man, you know, I thought I was going to be something completely different. And then it just took me a little while to settle into the fact that I was doing what I should be doing. And I think that that was maybe a turning point. And after that, I actually never really thought about doing anything else. The only thing I thought about was when I did retire, and I wasn't sure when that was going to be, what I would do, because I knew I was still going to be pretty young, and I didn't want to, you know, just sit around and eat bonbons and sit on the couch and watch soap. So
I don't know if it was a personality thing for me. I spent my first 10 years in the Army band. And in the Army, they're moving you every 3 or 4 years to a different place. And then I tried my hand for about 3 years as a self-employed musician. And then that wasn't working out as well as I hoped. And I started teaching part-time just to help kind of make ends meet. And I found out I loved it. But for the longest time, I don't know why this was, but for the longest time, after coming to my present position, I've been here 11 years now, I would find myself looking at the ads of schools that were open and thinking about those possibilities. And something changed. I don't know if it was in me or my age. I'm approaching 50 now. But about 2 or 3 years ago, I thought, why am I doing this? Why am I looking at other places like they're going to be better when I have the students I love, I have an administrator that I love, and things are going well. And when I look back 3 years and 5 years and 7 years and 10 years, I can see the growth that's happened. And so I finally quit looking, and that's when it seemed like things got even better for me.
That's interesting. I think that's a really good point you make. A lot of times people, and now they say the Gen Xers are going to have lots of different jobs in their working lifetime. But there is something to be said with being able to settle in. Now, there are people I've seen that settle in, and they settle in so much they really don't do a whole lot. But it doesn't have to be that way. But you have to make it interesting for yourself. There are also times when things don't go so well. I know a lot of states, I don't know about Colorado so much, but in the Midwest, there's a lot of school, a lot of education issues with the politicians wanting to do this and that. And, you know, we've had in the last three governors in Michigan, two of them have basically made it so that teachers are bad. Everything that's wrong in education is the teacher's fault. And, you know, if you let that get to you, yeah, you want to get out, you want to go find something else somewhere else. But the bottom line is, this too shall pass. And I'm now old enough to see that things really do repeat themselves historically. And you just have to figure out ways to get through that. Humor is a big, big deal. The orchestra director and I at East Lansing both had file folders full of just stuff that we could pull out, you know, the famous circle with the words bang head here that you could put on the wall, you know, just all kinds of things that humor, if nothing else, humor could get you through something. And I think that was really important.
What would you say to that young director who's in their 20s and now thinking the same way that you did, like, I'm feeling like I'm burned out?
They need to communicate with people. That's the number one thing. Like I said, I get to go out to school districts and I basically audition kids for scholarships for this Blue Lake Fine Arts Camp. So I get in a lot of schools and I see that in small schools, particularly where the band directors, maybe the band and the choir director, maybe they're the K-12 music teacher. And then if they're not communicating with other people and networking with other people, they feel like an island. And then I think that's a real dangerous position to be in. It's at those times when you don't have somebody else to listen to you talk, to bounce other ideas off of, that's when people start getting that burnout.
Do you have any last final words for wisdom for directors everywhere?
Words of wisdom. Boy, I don't know. I really think from what I still see that despite what's happening in education around the country, with cuts in budgets, with more standardized testing, all the different things, I still think teachers are making a big, big difference in kids' lives. And it doesn't matter if they're in a fluent school, a high academic school, a rural school, an inner city school. It doesn't matter. They're making a difference. And I hope they keep doing what they're doing.
Jane, thanks so much for giving of your time and your wisdom. It's been a pleasure to have you on the podcast today.
Well, thanks for having me.
The Music Ed Podcast, where you get quick and easy tips for how to be a better band team.